Okay, so today's, you know, I was talking to, he was like, okay, we're preaching on Proverbs. I'm like, okay, Proverbs, you know, wisdom, and quite familiar with it. And so I was like flipping through, I was like figuring out which chapter to choose and which verse to choose. And I happened to choose this one. As I was doing research on it, it turns out that this is one of the harder ones to kind of interpret, understand. And so hope to share with you some of my findings. And it's kind of interesting the way, like the journey I went on as I researched and studied these verses. So I call these verses the Meditations of Agur, because the reason why is because these are kind of the Agur, this guy, right? This guy, Agur, his meditations throughout his whole life, and kind of what he, some bits and pieces of important things that he kind of concluded with after all his meditations. So meditation, right? Do you guys like to sit down and just think about God? Have you done that? You know, just sit down and think of God. What kind of thoughts or questions do you have when you think about God? Take a minute or two just to share with someone near you, friend or family. What kind of questions do you have when you think about God, when you speak about God? And if you don't have questions, that's okay too. No problem. Just, you know, let's share. So, you know, I'm sure I'm looking around and, you know, a lot of us have been Christians for some time. I'm sure we have had questions and thoughts about God and various questions, you know, what does he do with it in our lives and how does he work and all that stuff. That is meditation. You know, when we sit down or when we're laying down or even when we're on the bus or walking or jogging and thinking about God or the Bible, we can call that meditation. That's meditating on God. Meditation actually has a really long tradition in Christianity. Going all the way very back to the beginning of the movement when people prayed alone or in groups. And about in the fourth century-ish, some people, like a Christian guy called Anthony the Great, that's a long time ago, we're talking like over 1,500 years ago, he meditated on Jesus and what he had said, and he was like, okay, so I think Jesus is calling me to, and calling some of us to give up our goods and just go out and live in the desert and pray. And so these guys are called the Desert Fathers. It's a whole movement. But they have been quite impactful to how we think about meditation today. If you pull up any Christian book about meditation or about, like, you know, like devotions, you're bound to come up to some Desert Fathers writings and the way they think about this kind of stuff. But meditation about God began even before Christianity and before Jesus. And so you got Agur, right? He's not a Christian. This is from the Old Testament. And so today we kind of explore how this one guy, Agur, he thought about God. What kind of questions did he have? And what answers did he come up with? So the Meditations of Agur. Well, I guess it's important to discuss who is Agur, right? Son of Jake or Yake. Unfortunately, we have no clue. We don't know enough about the guy. And throughout history, people have guessed like who this guy is, and some people have said it's a coded name for Solomon and David, or for Jacob and Israel. Both happen to be son-father pairs, right? So Agur, son of Jake, right? Or Yake. It's a... So they're just thinking like, okay, well, it's son-father pairs, right? So we got, you know, Jacob and Israel, et cetera, et cetera. But we don't really know, and the reason why we don't really know is because his name doesn't appear in any other ancient text. So there's no way to guess who he is and no way to know who for sure who he is. But that's okay. You know, we have this text, so we'll go with this. He calls himself an oracle. What is an oracle? So in the Old Testament, oracles are messages from God, right, to a person. But this person has some liberty to, you know, add a little bit to it and change it for the context that he's speaking in. And this idea is in the Old Testament, so I'm not just making it up. It's a real theme. Oracles are usually spoken in the style of the person who receives it. And so similarly, Agur's oracle is also a poem in his own words. And actually, the content of the oracle. There's no ascription to God. So there's no like, God said this, or I'm saying this to God, or, except the prayer does that, but there's nothing that says that God has told me this and I'm telling you this. To help us understand this, these verses 1-9, I've broken them down into four pieces, four chunks. And so the first chunk is verses 1-3, Agur's ignorance. I am weary, O God, I am wasting away. What does this mean? These are the words of a person who is about to pass away. He's about to die, you know, leave the earth. And although he has lived an entire life on this earth, and he has, you know, has a lot of thought about God, he says that he is ignorant. He lacks basic human understanding, so ordinary human understanding. He lacks wisdom, so learned human understanding. And he lacks knowledge of the Holy One. So three levels of kind of ignorance. It's interesting because if you notice, he goes from the lowest, right, the most simple basic understanding to a higher one, to wisdom, and then to the highest one he considered, which is knowledge of the Holy One. What is knowledge of the Holy One? Knowledge of the Holy One, when used in the Old Testament, it talks about some kind of esoteric, mysterious knowledge of God. So it's knowledge that is available to some people, but not all people get it. And so he basically says, I don't have any of this knowledge. I'm kind of ignorant about this stuff. But it's interesting here that Agur separates wisdom from knowledge of the Holy One. He deliberately splits these two up. It's very interesting because in the rest of the Proverbs, actually these two ideas are closely connected, very closely connected. For example, let's take Proverbs 9:10. It says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. There's this deep connection in the rest of Proverbs that connects wisdom to knowledge of the Holy One. But Agur is doing something very unique here. He's splitting them apart. He's saying that they're two different things. It's very interesting because Agur says, I am too stupid to be human. I do not have human understanding. I mean, I'm sure he has some human understanding, basic human understanding. I mean, we all have some basic human understanding. We know that when we're hungry, we need to get food, right? When we're tired, we probably need to sleep. You know, to come to church, we probably need to walk, or take a bus, or ride a car, right? Or drive a car. So we have basic understanding, and he does too. But the way he says this is kind of like it's not really saying that he doesn't know anything. It's more like to show that he's really humble. Like, oh, I don't know anything. You know, like when you ask a really smart person, you're like, oh, you're a smart person. Like, no, I'm not smart. I don't know anything. Kind of like that. He knows stuff, but he's just using this as kind of like a humility, kind of a way to show off. Not show off, but to, you know, he's trying to be humble, basically. Moving up into here, you got wisdom, right? Learned knowledge. Wisdom is hard to come by. I'm getting up in the years, and I don't know if I have much wisdom. I think it's hard to come by. It's quite rare. He doesn't have any, he says. And then moving up another tier, knowledge of the Holy One, he says that it's even rarer, it's even harder to get, because his understanding of the knowledge of the Holy One is that you can't try to get, you can't work to get it. It's something that is given to you. And so he just happened to not get it, is his opinion. The next section is verse 4, titled Human Inadequacy. If you look at these verses, right, who has ascended to heaven and come down? Who has gathered the wind? Whose hands have gathered up the wind? I put that translation because it's easier to understand. Who has wrapped up the waters in a garment? Who has established all the ends of the earth? And you're like, oh, okay, well, you know, this is a you know, this is a good one, right? This, you know, strong person, right? And you guys think about Job, when God asked Job, you know, what are all, how do you explain all these mysteries, you know? But then we'll get down to the last bit, right? Who, what is this person, what is the person's name, and what is the name of the person's child? We're like, oh, God, it's got to be Jesus, right? It's got to be talking about Jesus. So the answer to this is Jesus, 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 Jesus. Unfortunately, that is not a correct reading of this verse. And the reason I'll explain why it's not a correct reading of the verse is because of this really important question here. Who has ascended to heaven and come down? That means that the starting point of this person is from earth to heaven, goes to heaven, and then comes back down. And we all know Jesus didn't do that. Jesus went from heaven to earth, back up to heaven. It's the opposite order, right? What do they mean by this? Who has ascended heaven and come down? Well, in the ancient context of Agora and the ancient Israelites, they weren't thinking about... let me try to explain it again. So, they were thinking about a human being, a literal human being. What literal human being has ascended to heaven and come down? This is a rhetorical question. A rhetorical question meaning it's a question with a very obvious answer. Let me give you an example of another rhetorical question. Is rain wet? It's wet, right? Yes, it is wet. It's rhetorical. You don't need it. Yes, we know it's wet. Even kids can answer this. Do cats meow? Do cats meow? Meow, right? Yes, cats meow, right? These are the answer to these questions are obvious. This right here is a rhetorical question. The answer is either someone, some human being, no human being, or God. These are the possible answers. What do you think the answer to this question is then? Who has ascended to heaven and come down? It's a rhetorical question, right? The answer is no human being. No human being has done this. Only God can do this. What man's hands have gathered up the winds? No man. What man has wrapped up the waters in a garment? No man. What man has established all the ends of the earth? No man, again, no man. The question is not, these questions are not about coming up with some weird answer. The questions have very obvious answers. The questions force the audience to recognize that no human being is capable of any of these things. That's the reason. And the only one capable is God himself. So in these questions, in these rhetorical questions, what Agur is doing is he is confirming the power of God. Combined with what he had said earlier about his own ignorance, right? What is it put together? You put it together is to compare man's ignorance, his own ignorance, man's ignorance, with God's power. It makes God's power seem bigger and stronger, and God's more capable of doing things. I mean, he says he can't even understand basic human understanding, yet God can do all these things. So he's trying to highlight the power of God. It follows that the answer to the next question, what is the person's name, is very obvious too, right? It's Yahweh. That's the name of God. Now the tricky part, I guess, would be the next question. So what is the name of the person's child? Now think about it, right? Okay, we gotta get out of our, you know, Christian mindset. Like God, the Father, Jesus, Son. Okay, we gotta get out of that mindset. We gotta go back to the ancient Hebrew mindset. What did the Hebrews think? Who would the Hebrews have thought God's son meant? God's child meant? If you think about it, right? Israel was called God's child. Repeatedly, over and over and over again, Israel is God's child. Israel meaning the the nation of Israel. So it's very likely that the original listeners here, audience here, would have thought, okay, yeah, Israel. And another possibility actually is angels. So you've got Israel angels, but it's definitely not Jesus here yet. Agur, when he wrote this, he wasn't thinking about Jesus. He was thinking about maybe Israel or angels. Okay. Then in next section, in verses 5 and 6, Agur holds up high God's words. It's very interesting because compared to his view of wisdom, right? Agur seems to place much higher position of God's words than other writers in the Proverbs. Elsewhere in the Proverbs, you see that writers encourage people to seek wisdom, to nurture wisdom. Blessed is the one who finds wisdom. Wisdom is better than jewels. The one who gets wisdom loves life. But Agur is interesting because he, at the same time, seems to downplay the importance of wisdom, but also increases the role of revelation. Revelation meaning what? The revelation that has produced the Torah, the scriptures that he reads. He gives high value to the scriptures. That's why it says the words of God. Thus far, what have we seen? We've seen that Agur is an interesting person. He's humble, yet he also seeks to, he desires some mysterious knowledge of God. And he sees this mysterious knowledge of God as separate from human wisdom, human learned wisdom. At the same time, he holds a very high view of revelation and divinity. And this makes sense, right? Because the guy he holds very high view of knowledge of the Holy One. So of course he's going to take a very high view of God. Put together, what do we get? A plus B plus C, and we conclude with the prayer. Now, when I chose these verses, I thought the prayer was the most important bit and the most relevant for us today. And you'll see why in a little bit. I remember in the early years of being a Christian, I always looked up to the prayer because I thought the prayer was a good one. You know, it's like, you know, we don't desire to be super wealthy, but at the same time, we don't have to be super poor. And that's a nice place to be, right? You don't have to be poor and you don't have to be super wealthy. It's comfortable. It's a nice place to be. And when I picked these verses, I thought that would be the main point I would be preaching on. But it turns out it's a little bit different. But let's do look at the prayer, though, too. The prayer. Agur has these two prayers to God. He prays for two things. The first thing he prays for is to be free of deceit. No lies. No dishonest words. I think this is really important still because I have been involved in some U.S. politics stuff and there's a lot of lies going on, but it's complicated. But my point is that, you know, any Christian, I think, that looks at these words and says, we should be free from deceit. I think this is an important verse to support that position. The second prayer is kind of longer. He's asking to receive just enough for his daily needs, no more and no less. In this prayer, if you notice, he's not ultimately concerned about whether he's poor or rich. That's not his ultimate concern. His ultimate concern is about bringing honor to God, or specifically, not causing public humiliation of God's name through bad behavior. That's what he's ultimately concerned about. It's very interesting because, you know, earlier I said I want to preach on this, you know, being not being poor, not being wealthy, but it seems that Agur, he wasn't even concerned about this. He just didn't want to bring shame to God's name. In fact, Augur's message about his position about wealth and humility, wealth and poverty, it reflects the overall message of the Old Testament regarding wealth and poverty, is that poverty is not seen as a good thing, and wealth isn't always a bad thing. And I thought, okay, well, okay, how do I demonstrate that wealth isn't always a bad thing? Oh, you got wealthy people like Abraham and Solomon. They were incredibly wealthy, right? Well, being wealthy isn't always a bad thing. And being poor isn't always a good thing. It's true, Augur says, that being wealthy can lead to overconfidence. And this is a huge problem. I don't know if you guys keep up with Christian news or not, but I do. I have I think it's almost every 2 days or every maybe two times a week, I get these emails from a Christian journal, a Christian magazine, ChristianityToday.com. And I saw this pop up in my feed, I think it was 2 days ago. It said, Christian billionaire condemned to fraud or something like that, or is found guilty of fraud, something like that. And I was like, wow, who's this guy? It's Christian billionaire, right? And I click on it, I open it up, I'm like, oh, I know the guy, okay, his name is Bill Huang, I know him, okay. Because 2 years ago, I've been following this guy. He's a very interesting guy, if you guys want to find out. Bill Huang is very interesting. He's he's a Korean-American. He immigrated to the U.S., I think fairly young, maybe in his early teens or younger. His father was a pastor, and he grew up, you know, in the church. And this guy is quite interesting because he became a kind of an investor. So he managed funds, money for a lot of people. And he learned with a really, really good guy, a guy who's good at earning money, I'd say. But Bill Huang is interesting because he is a committed Christian who has appeared on a number of churches and talks at even Fuller Seminary. And this is not his first time found guilty of committing fraud. This is his second time of committing fraud. And if you know a little bit about how it works, basically what he did was he took his money, he went to the banks and he borrowed like 10 times the amount of money that he had, and he put it into like two, three stocks. And as they lost value, the bank said, hey, you need to give us more money or we're gonna sell your stocks. You need to have more money. They sold his stocks. And he lost something like $120 billion. So I mean, it's a complicated thing, right? The guy's wealthy. The guy's a committed Christian. He apparently, you know, had a good understanding of what it meant to be a Christian, yet he was capable of committing fraud, and now he's going to go to jail for 35 years or something. So he's in big trouble. I don't know enough to say that what he was overconfident in his positions or whatever. I mean, I wish the Bible had talked about leverage a little more, but it doesn't, so maybe that's why he just doesn't have any biblical verses to help him out with that problem. But yeah, being wealthy can lead to problems, and even society will punish you. And I'm sure God will deal with that somehow too. The idea of being wealthy in the Old Testament, being overconfident because of wealth in the Old Testament is thoroughly condemned. If you read through some of the prophets, you'll see that God has a big beef with people who are wealthy and trample on poor people and the underprivileged. But at the same time, Agur also notes that being poor can also lead to stealing. And I don't want to comment much on stealing, our understanding of theft in the contemporary societies, but stealing it in the ancient world was definitely viewed as bad, and it was codified into many cultures, including the Israelites' Ten Commandments. It's something that most cultures were against. The meditations of Agur, right? Let's summarize. The meditations of Agur are very weird. You know, they're very strange because they don't really fit into wisdom literature. And the reason why they don't fit is because, number one, Agur admits his own ignorance, and he goes out of his way to kind of emphasize his ignorance. This is not common in wisdom literature. And number two, he offers a prayer, which is very, very, very rare, almost unseen in wisdom literature. So it's weird, right? He's got this meditation, and he says this weird stuff, and it appears in wisdom literature, and it doesn't fit into wisdom literature, right? So it's really strange. And unlike other proverbs that emphasize the importance of learned wisdom, right, that second tier, learned wisdom, Agur seems to downplay it, seems to not give it that much weight. He doesn't even ask for wisdom in his prayer. You know, it just tells you that the guy doesn't really care that much about this wisdom. And furthermore, he doesn't really specify what kind of wisdom he lacks, but it certainly isn't ethical wisdom or practical wisdom that are mentioned in other parts of the Proverbs. And I'm sure that in our sermons here on wisdoms, we've been, maybe two can confirm this, we've been focusing on maybe practical wisdom, right? Learned wisdom. I see him nodding, so yes. Agur doesn't do that. So his view is quite unique. It's not in line with the typical concepts of wisdom literature. Here is why, and this is really important. The reason why his words may reflect the tension between human learned wisdom and the divine Torah or revelation. Some scholars think that this is most likely due to some tension that arose between these two thoughts sometime between the 5th and the end of the 3rd century BCE. There was this difficulty in balancing what was most important, divine revelation or humans learning from God's revelation and producing human wisdom. You know, I think this question of divine revelation and human wisdom is something we continue to struggle with. There are people who fall on one side of the spectrum and say all human wisdom is not worthy and is not good, and we all what we have depends on revelation. And then there are people who fall on their side that, you know, revelation has essentially stopped, and he has given us enough for us to develop human wisdom, and we shall continue like that. Where you fall, what you think about this, is important, I think, and Agur's meditation highlights that tension between the two. These are the meditations of Agur. Earlier I asked you guys, what do you guys think about God? You know, what are some questions you thought about God? I wonder if any of you have thought about this issue, the tension between wisdom and revelation. I know I didn't until I came up with this. I never thought about it. I didn't think it was that big of a deal. But these are the meditations of Agur, a guy that we don't even know who he is. We don't know for sure who he is. He's an elderly man who is about to pass away, and he thinks about the most important things in life. And he concludes that knowledge of the Holy One, this revelation wisdom, is the most important thing in life, but also the hardest thing to find, and the hardest thing that he lacked, and he specifically lacks. He has also a very high view of God and doesn't want his behavior to bring shame to God. Unlike most proverbs, Agur distinguishes human wisdom and divine knowledge, and he seems to separate the relationship between the two. He cuts them down and separates them. Do you agree with Agur that human wisdom and divine revelation are entirely categorically different? Or do you take the view of other proverb writers that human wisdom comes out of revelation, or that divine knowledge leads to wisdom? Which one do you think is more important in life? Which one do you rely on in life? And how do you balance the two in your life? These are questions that we can think about, and that I think Agur has rightfully brought up for us to think about. And as we think about them, maybe through the week, we can think about it. Human wisdom, divine revelation. We can think about it through the week. And, one point. One point different from Agur is that we have a lot more revelation than him. Keep in mind that he didn't have, like, you know, most of the Old Testament. He didn't have any of the prophets. He probably didn't have much of the later historical books. Didn't have any of the New Testament. So technically, we have a lot more revelation to him. Is it enough for us to work with to keep pushing human wisdom forward? As we think about that, let's close in prayer. Heavenly Father, we thank you for Agur and his meditations. We thank you that you have kept his meditations for us to look at today and for Christians across time. We thank you that Agur has considered this issue of wisdom versus revelation. And we thank you for the revelation you have given to us, specifically and in particular, the revelation of salvation through Jesus Christ. So as we go on our week, we thank you for Agur, and we hope that Agur's questions will also stir inside of us and encourage us to think about this question. How do we balance wisdom with revelation? We thank you, and we pray in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.